Coming up on today's show...
Oftentimes, when you see these teams that are really locked in, it's a completely unspoken art, where you will see the engineer and the producer or the songwriter never even say a single word to each other, but you'll see them build the entire song because we've all just worked on hundreds of songs together.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Remember, too, about the other free option for interaction with this show that I've been mentioning the last few weeks, Featured Up, which you can find a link to in this episode's description. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Los Angeles, my guest is a recording and mixing engineer who has worked with the likes of Justin Bieber, Snoop Dogg, Meghan Trainor, Pooh Bear, and Kehlani, among others. His work has brought him all over the world and earned him multiple platinum records. He has not only worked with incredible talent in music, but also run professional recording studios, worked for publishing companies, worked on shows for major television networks, worked on sports broadcast teams for ESPN, recorded hundreds of audiobooks, worked in live sound, and dabbled in just about every form of professional audio during his journey. He has been featured in Sound on Sound and Tape Op Magazine, among other industry publications. You've been hearing an acoustic version of a song he worked on called Snooze by SZA, featuring Justin Bieber. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Mark Parfit.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. It's good to have you on the show. I appreciate you making time. Let's get started by having you share first all about the song that was just playing, the acoustic version of Snooze, including what your role was on that track and any other behind the scenes that you can give us from that project.
Yeah, definitely. This song, it's a special one for me because it's just the accumulation of years of just work and sacrifice to get to the point to even have this particular opportunity to mix this song. And on this one, I not only mixed it, but I, you know, edited and comped the vocals. It was recorded by the producer, at least, you know, as far as Justin's part, was recorded by the producer Carter Lang when they were, you know, just at his house studio one day. And, you know, then they called me to say, hey, man, can you come help me edit these vocals? Because, you know, this is not my world. Justin just asked me, and I just, you know, I have the gear here, so I did it. But we want to, you know, make this sound right, and I think they want to put out the song, like, really soon, ideally. And it was cool because it was a song that it wasn't acoustic or anything. They were actually just going to do a version of Justin on the original music, and that's what they recorded it to, and that's what I initially mixed and edited the song to. But right at the final hour before we were going to send it to Justin just to get his approval, Carter had an idea, was like, hey, this could be kind of cool if this is just an acoustic, because when he did the recording, he didn't write his own verse. That's what they thought he was going to do, is write his own verse to be a feature as a remix, but he just sang her verse. So it was like, what do we do with it? Like, how do we make it make a little bit more sense? And so he's like, well, maybe let's just do, what if we do it acoustic? I'm like, dude, that's a fantastic idea. We can do it super quick too. So he pulled out the guitar, we recorded it literally in just a couple of minutes and chopped it together and, you know, removed the old music and sent it to Justin, and he loved it. They sent it to SZA's team, they loved it, and it kind of, you know, made it make more sense versus, you know, him just kind of doing a cover almost. And we made it more into its own little thing. So yeah, I was just blessed to, you know, be able to mix a song with Carter, and you know, it came out, and I'm just really happy because this is something that it took me, you know, years to even be able to get in front of Justin Bieber and be able to record him, let alone have the chance to mix a song and, you know, see me in that
light. Yeah, there's so much that I love about what you just said, and especially the part about it could have almost come out sounding like a cover, because I'm not even going to pretend to remember who it was. I think it was on my own show. But I remember years ago, somebody that put out an album that was like 8 different versions of the same song, and you do get to a point where you go, really? I mean, we don't want it to be exactly like SZA did it, but it has to be different enough that the public is not going to say, hey, we're being duped here. Like, this is basically the same thing. You're just adding Justin. So I'd love that you kind of walked us through the way that it took shape. But I wonder, at some point, and I don't know that this even involves you, but at some point, does it go to SZA just to say, this is what we're talking about doing? Is it, oh, Bruce, she's the one who initiated this. This is how it gets Justin doing what he did and everything you just described.
What we did was we did that version. We sent both because, you know, they were expecting him on the full-blown version, like same music and everything. And we did the acoustic one, and we sent, I did a mix, like a quick mix on that one and a quick mix on the acoustic one, and we sent both options. And Justin was for sure like, oh, man, this is magical. Like, I love this one. And then I want to say, I don't even know if the other version ended up getting to SZA, the original. I think the acoustic one, and I think everyone just kind of was like, oh, this acoustic one is kind of just the move. It just makes more sense, and it just feels right. But they probably end up, she probably got both versions, I'm sure. But
do you know, or do you think that she's the one that initiated in the first place? Like, is it her that does that? Is it her that says, how about Justin Bieber? Do you happen to know how that all got initiated and came to be?
I don't know how it came to be honest with you, but that conversation did happen where they wanted to do another version with Justin. It was initially their idea for sure.
Okay, yeah.
And, but I think just the way how it came about was just kind of very like natural, and it wasn't, I don't think they had any firm plans or like, hey, we need you to do it this way. It was more like, hey, it would be great to have you on this. And, you know, Justin just ended up recording, you know, the same verse when he went over to Carter's house that day. And it was like, because when I initially came through, I was like, okay, so Justin covered Snooze. Wait, what is happening? And then, you know, Carter's like, well, you know, there's very loose guidelines here. We're kind of figuring it out. I'm like, oh, okay, I see.
So what you just described, and I'm leading up to a question with this, what you just described is by the time you came into it, it was that far along. Is that a hard and fast rule, or is it, oh no, Bruce, there are some times when the Mark Parfit of the project, he will already know way back when they first decide, we're going to do another version of this at some point, and we're going to start looking around for who's going to do the feature.
Yeah, it all just depends on which artist and which project, and I feel like my role is always so different every time too, especially within like the Justin world, because normally it doesn't, you know, I'm not included from the jump right there. I more hop into engineer when it happens, and then I kind of deliver files. But in this case, it was much different than how things normally go. But every project is different. Every artist is different. And my role within every artist is different, too, because, you know, just it all just depends on relationships, just like everybody else.
So that song came out last year. Let's instead go way back, Mark, and tell us about your start in music.
Starting really was all just, you know, playing guitar, messing around in high school. Probably about 14, I, you know, picked up guitar, and I didn't have like musical parents or musical family at all. It was just something that I gravitated towards. And I think that little start of just, you know, I want to play guitar and noodle around and mess around with some rock music kind of eventually led me into being in bands with my friends and trying to play shows. And that, you know, obviously you want to be a rock star, but you have to like create the songs and record them. And that's what introduced me to, you know, the recording studio for this first time, and being at the house where, you know, one of my friends had a cracked version of Adobe Audition that he threw on my computer. And then I had another friend that had a Audio Technica AT2020, the USB version. And, you know, we started making songs at the house, and it was always just, we'd get off of school, make some songs for the band, or make some like just joke, silly, stupid, you know, just joke songs for, you know, no purpose, but just to make ourselves laugh. And that all really like piqued my curiosity for just recording and making music. And it changed my process where I didn't want to be in front of people or performing or doing or even playing. I don't want to do any of that. I was so much more curious with like EQing and putting reverb and delays and mixing, and that was what started everything for
me. Interesting. And you said that was what age when you first picked up the guitar?
14.
Oh, 14, 14. So what about going to school?
Going to school, I think it was after, you know, a couple years of making songs at the house and, you know, trying to do the music thing more seriously, I realized, oh, wait, one of my friends, Devin Corey, who's an amazing engineer and producer that's here in Los Angeles, he went to high school with me, graduated the same year, and he went to Full Sail. And I saw that I was like, wait, you could actually do this as a job? And he's going to school for it, where he's like in nice studios and it's, you know, getting like, because there is a guy at the end of the day that records and mixes and masters. Like, these are all jobs. And it really, like, I was like, oh, and you can go to school for it? Wow. You know, I don't really like the traditional college that I'm at right now. It just doesn't really, it's not serving my purpose. And when I saw that, I was like, okay, I looked into a similar school. And I found one in Tampa, Florida, and my sister and brother-in-law were nice enough to just let me get a free place to stay at their house. And I went to school, and that was a program very similar to Full Sail, where I learned everything from, you know, every bit of the audio industry, from TV, film. It was mostly focused on music, but we did everything from TV, film, live sound, and so on, like, and got a little taste of music theory. And it was just a very well-rounded program. And that was what kind of gave me the foundation for what, you know, I built my whole career off of. And I've made money off of every little thing that I've learned from school, whether, you know, I wanted to or not, because music has always been and will be the goal. But along the way, you do other things that, you know, just pays the bill. And the school gave me like a great foundation to, you know, make a career out of all this. And it was what introduced me into working in like pro studios in the first place. I got my first foot in professional facilities outside of school because of the instructors at my school that liked me and, you know, just gave me the referral to get into some of these doors.
Okay, this is really crazy. And Mark, hold your answer. In a minute, I am going to ask you, if you're comfortable saying it, where that was that you went in Tampa. But audience, I got to give you some background here. This is so amazing, everything that you're hearing come out. Mark and I actually met each other face-to-face, shook hands at the NAMM show. I want to say that might have been April of last year. And so fast forward to now, here we are recording this interview, and he's talking about Full Sail, which this past January, I was at PodFest Multimedia Expo in Orlando, and I was shaking hands with an old friend of mine from years and years ago. But the last time I saw him was I went to Full Sail so that he could kind of give me a tour because he worked there at the time. Probably 2 days ago, I got an email from Full Sail, since I'm based in Tampa, saying, hey, we're having a career fair. Would you like to be a part of this? And so now to come full circle and have Mark talk about that he was here in Tampa is just amazing, the way this is all lined up. So Mark, are you comfortable saying where that was that you were doing all this learning in Tampa?
Yeah, I went to a program called International Academy of Design and Technology. And it was a program that has like fashion, music, video games. It was very much like a creative school, photography programs. It was every bit of the kind of like more entertainment creative process. And that was where I went to school. It was very similar to Full Sail, but it was just, you know, a different program over there. But unfortunately, then it got absorbed into like a medical school and got just, you know, I guess tanked. I don't know what the word, it absorbed, wow. And then they dissolved the entire thing.
Yeah, wow. That's unfortunate.
And so it's no longer around because they had a couple campuses across the country. But I'm super thankful for that program because I learned so much. I had so many amazing instructors there. And then even those instructors were what led me to get my first connections into like real world stuff. Because in music, the hardest thing is just getting started and getting connections. And everything is so based on who you know.
Exactly.
That like you might really never get a chance unless you know somebody.
So let me ask you then, your beginning days of working in pro studios and pro audio, when was that? What did that look like? Where were you? How did you start into that world? Who gave you a chance to do so? All the things, as they say.
Yeah. I got my first in really through one of my close instructors. I had two studios. I had a studio called Clear Track Studios that's still around in Clearwater,
yep,
Florida. And one of my instructors, Jim Forbes, you know, gave me the referral so I could intern over there. And that was about 2013 when I was interning and just kind of actually being in a real world facility. And I was still finishing up school at that time. And then towards the end of the program, which was 2014 is when I graduated, the main head of the program named Jeff Sansone, who's one of the most intelligent people I've ever met and might still be the most intelligent person I've ever met, he was like, hey, I was interning at ClearTrack, and he goes, hey, there's this other studio that's really cool called Big Three. They're looking for an assistant. You interested? And I was like, of course, yes. Please. And it was another bump up, you know, versus just interning. And it was like a nicer studio too. So he gave me the referral. I went over there where I essentially kind of interned, but I had the roles of an assistant engineer. And I was doing everything in the session. I wasn't, you know, just taking out trash or doing any of that kind of stuff. I was, you know, interning, but I was assisting essentially. And after, you know, maybe 8 or 9 months of doing that there, then they, you know, brought me on and I started making money in engineering for real and just getting paid. So that was, you know, at the end of 2014, I got into a professional facility. And by the time I had graduated, a little bit afterwards, I was getting paid as like an actual employee and, you know, already working professionally in the real world.
How typical is that? What would you say to the person in the audience that's thinking, I can live with that timeline? Is that realistic, or is it, oh, this is the exception to the rule? You could probably sit in that role for 3 or 4 years before anybody finally, and you are going to feel like an intern and you are going to be the one getting the coffee.
I mean, it's realistic as far as, yeah, that's probably around the timeline. I think at that place, I'd put in almost a year's worth of time before I like was actually getting a paycheck. But even at the place prior to that, that I was at, there were people interning at that place for like 2 years plus. And I remember thinking like, oh man, these guys have been here for 2-3 years and they're not even getting paid or having the chance yet. Like, oh, this is a rough battle. So it's so dependent on the place that you go to and the people, because then you're always waiting for the next person above you to essentially move on, get fired or whatever, you know, leave their role.
Retire.
So there's a spot. Yeah. Or retire, because there's only so many spots in a recording studio. There's only so many jobs.
Let me put you on the spot then. If you sat there and looked at those people and thought, my gosh, these folks have been here for 2 years, if not longer, and they're still not getting paid, why did you not give up?
I just love this so much. I knew, regardless if I'm getting paid, I just enjoy it so much, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get to my end result. So if I have to even stick this out for 3-4 years, so be it. That's just the cost of admission, you know? But luckily I had another opportunity, because one thing with me, I'm never going to be complacent. So I'm always still searching for the other opportunity. So when the other studio opportunity came up, I was taking a look at my surroundings, was like, I don't know, it's kind of taking too long, and I don't know if the reward's going to be enough at this place. But I found another place that was, like, I thought was making way better, cooler music, and they were doing way bigger things, and there's actually an opportunity there. Cool, because I went over there. There was another intern that got hired from my school. There's two of us that came at the same time. And then, you know, I just knew, I was like, okay, there's more room for opportunities. They're doing bigger things here, and even if I have to wait a long time, I know it's eventually going to come. And when I was at that place, after a couple months, I reached out to the head engineer. I was like, hey, you know, just one-on-one, I was like, is there a chance that I can actually get paid here and this is like a real thing? Or, you know, is this just, you know, what it's going to be? And he was like, no, 100%. If you put in some more time, I will definitely be starting to throw you in on weekends, get you on real paid gigs. You're right on the path. I just, you know, need to see some more time and have some more opportunities open up. And, you know, I did that time, and eventually the opportunity did come up because the person above me started to, you know, not show as much interest, and I was one eager, ready to go anytime, anywhere. And so I was patient, and then that time eventually came. And, you know, when you're hungrier than the people around you, you are going to succeed over them eventually.
Yeah, and that hunger will get noticed by the right people too, you know, as well as the talent. But audience, don't worry. I'm wondering the same thing that you are. Mark, all this time that you're describing that you were working there and you weren't getting paid, I think you said this was at ClearTrack first, how were you paying the bills?
That one, I was working as a, this is the last normal job that I had, was working at Walmart as a stocker. I was stocking shelves overnight. And just doing the graveyard shift. And when I started working at ClearTrack, I was like, okay, let me switch from the graveyard to the day shift. And then when I switched over to Big Three, which was the studio that I ended up getting hired at and worked there for many years. And when I got to that place, I was like, okay, after a couple months, I said, you know what? I talked to the head engineer. I got to confirmation where he said, yeah, you're on your way. I just need a little bit more time. And when I heard that, I was like, cool, let me just double down on this. So I had like just a little bit of money saved up. And I just one day just no-called, no-showed, and never went back to Walmart when I was like, you know what? The studio stuff is moving. I can see the projects like happening and I can see the opportunities opening up and I got the word. So I was like, you know what? Forget this. Nice. I'm never going to back to Walmart. And I just thugged it out. And there was many times where when I was still waiting for that check, I sold all of my shit. I sold like every pedal, every guitar, every piece of thing that I had, I sold so I could still keep paying my phone bill and paying my my car bill and gas to get to the studio and whatnot, because they would pay for my gas for making like any runs or anything, but I wasn't, you know, getting the paycheck yet. Yeah, so it was a rough start.
Well, that's still a great story. It's a great journey. It's a great testimony to persistence and dedication. And folks, I am pleased to report, as you can tell by the intro, the amazing, I'm going to turn it around and say outhouse to the penthouse story that Mark has, because from what we just heard to you got the opportunity to not only work with Pooh Bear in Los Angeles, but to run the studio for his publishing company. I'd love to hear all about that, especially after what we just heard, going from throwing the blue Walmart smock in the garbage, and next thing you know, you're not only working at the studio here, but now I've got you in Los Angeles.
Yeah. That, I feel like, was the big turning point for my career, and definitely full validation that I'm like, all right, I'm worthy and I'm capable, because prior to that, I was working at Big Three, and that place gave me such a great foundation. And I did my few years there working at, and I was the main engineer and was doing all kinds of great things with them. But then the time came where I was like, okay, I can see that the friends that have moved to Los Angeles, I can see their trajectory of their career just going so much quicker than all the people over here. You know, the big artists only come through Florida so often, like, and especially in like Tampa or Orlando or any of these, it's still not great. So I realized I needed to make the move to Los Angeles. And the thing that was hard for me was, you know, it's not like you can just transfer jobs or anything. It's you're starting completely fresh, and this city is so big, you're nothing. Even if you are at the best studio or you're the guy in your city, you come out here, you are absolutely nothing. There's so much high profile stuff going on that it just levels you very quickly. So when I came here, didn't have anything. I had a couple of leads from people I've worked with and a couple meetings that I could have. And luckily, somehow, some way, I got linked up with one of my close producers that worked with me in Florida, introduced me to this amazing mixer named Claudio Queenie. And I had a meeting with him. He had a great discussion. He liked me. He said, okay, Jason said you're cool, so you're cool with me. I don't want to engineer anything, so I get calls for engineers all the time. I just want to mix, so I'll shoot people your way. He started sending me on some label gigs here and there that would come up, and eventually one day he goes, hey, my buddy Ali, he's starting a publishing company and a recording studio and doing it with Pooh Bear. Would you be interested? And of course, I'm like, oh my God, whoa. Yes, immediate yes, everything, because Pooh Bear is just, you know, he's a legend. And the fact with the studio was just another a cherry on top. So I met Ali, did an interview with him, saw that they were building out some studios, had a publishing company that was brand new. And he goes, okay, cool. Well, I like you. I'm going to put you in a session with Pooh Bear and, you know, Harv, the other producer that they had signed to the publishing company at the time. We'll see if the creatives like you. They like you, then you're in. I patiently waited to catch that day that I could catch Pooh Bear when he's in town and wanting to come and work. Showed up, he came in, did a song. You know, he was probably in and out in maybe an hour, and came in, recorded his song, was happy, left. And that night, Ali, he showed me a text that he said, okay, it was like a screenshot from Pooh Bear from Justin Bieber. He's like, hey, that song that you recorded earlier today, he sent it to Bieber and he liked it. So he's like, you know, just to let you know that, you know, this is like the world that you're in now. This is what's happening. And I was like, okay, this is a much more serious level of like things going on the day to day. And then on top of having that whole studio that we're building out and having, and I'm the one running and operating and making the calls to, you know, I'm looking at invoices for multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars for, like, you know, whatever equipment and build out stuff. I'm like, okay, this is just another level, a completely other level.
And
luckily I was able to rise to the occasion, and they liked me. And yeah, I was able to run that studio for a couple of years and work with Pooh Bear and all the amazing people that they had come through. And it really gave me a huge pool of major artists that I was working with on, you know, the day to day.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And folks, if you're thinking about making the move to a place like Nashville, a place like New York, a place like Los Angeles, and you say, oh, I won't have the problems that Mark encountered, I know people there, go back 2 weeks and listen to my interview with Mike Avename. I'm going to put a link on the show page for this episode to episode 538, so you can go back and listen to that conversation. He talked about that, well, I had gone back and forth from Australia to Los Angeles enough that I knew people in Los Angeles. He moved to the States, and it was as though he didn't know anybody. So what Mark is saying is very similar to what Mike encountered, which is all of a sudden you go out there and you go, wow, where's my first gig? Where am I going to catch a break? And, you know, Mark, there's nothing like getting settled into a new city, and then all of a sudden it's time to hit the road, which is what happened to you, having to travel to record.
Yeah. After getting closer with Pooh Bear, that started to bring me, he gained trust in me, and I became essential to his process. So he wouldn't want to record, you know, any artist or even himself with anybody else, because I just understand his process, and it became very unspoken. So yeah, he started bringing me around all over the place. I'd be, you know, in Miami one day, then in New York, then in Minnesota, then fly over to Atlanta, then, you know, wherever the gigs were taking him, it was taking me as well. And that kind of just opened up another tier of what this job that I didn't really, you know, realize was a thing. When you start to get with these creatives and these talents that are like on the higher level, you know, you have a bigger expectation, and you're traveling around with them on site, on spec, you're on their time all the time. So it's became a different job, and I would still try and run the studio, you know, from my phone. But then at a certain point it turned over where that Pooh Bear ended up moving to Miami, and I was like, you know what, I don't want to quite move my whole existence over to Florida, because I just came back from there. So I'm going to go and stick it out in Los Angeles and kind of just find the next thing and just work, you know, more independently. And that brought me to getting tied up with Justin Bieber, where I did even more traveling than I did with with Pooh Bear. And I went on tour with him, and I, you know, have traveled around to all kinds of different studios wherever they need to, you know, wherever he feels like working.
But was there a point in time where, with Pooh Bear, when it was time to go on the road, was there a point in time where, when I was talking to Mike Avename 2 weeks ago, and a lot of guests have said this about when someone comes to you in this business and they ask you to do something, you just say yes, and then you figure out later how you're actually going to do it if it's not what you actually do. Was there a point in time where Pooh Bear said, well, I want you to come on the road with me, and we're going to record in Miami, and we're going to record over here, and we're going to record over there? And you just, okay, cool. Yeah, man, when are we leaving? Where are we headed first? Was there a point in time where you stopped and went, oh gosh, how am I actually going to do that? Like, what are the actual logistics of doing this?
Yeah, there came to a point where after the, you know, the first few times, you kind of, everything's always immediately last minute and right now. And it's like you're getting on flights tonight. So after, you know, a couple of those, you start to become a little bit numb to the process, and it starts to become more of like the regular job kind of thing. So it was always, whether I knew how I can make anything happen, I'm always going to say yes and figure it out, no matter any situation. And that one, after a few, I learned and got a little Pelican case that I load with everything that I need for a single-handed studio operation that I could make happen in a hotel, a studio. I bring the same things with me regardless of where we're at, and I still use that. Even if I'm in a fantastic multi-million dollar studio, I'm using my whole setup, because I don't want to be bothered by any of the studios, whatever technical stuff that they got going on and whatever demons lie in their computer. I don't want to even know about none of it. I don't got time to mess with none of that or be bothered. I want to know that my process is going to be unshaken, and I can come in, execute, and get out. And, you know, working with Pooh Bear, it really helped. At first, it was like, oh, trying to figure it out. But then after a couple of times, it's like, I found my process and I found what helps me succeed every time. And that's, I've taken that with me for every other artist that I've go fly out and do these random kind of spot gigs or anything. I have my little Pelican with my whole set of gear and I can go figure it out no matter what situation.
Love it. I'm joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Los Angeles by recording and mixing engineer Mark Parfit. Visit his official website at mparfit.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Once you land on his website, look for the social media logos at the bottom to link over to Mark's Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and he's even on Threads. Look, too, on mparfit.com for the contact form to get in touch with him about rates and services. Whether it is on this show or in my weekly blog that I publish every Monday on the website, I am always stressing the importance of networking, contacts, relationships. We even heard Mark just talking about it himself a few minutes ago. You always hear me talk on this show about and link at the end of my weekly blogs to the Owl app, and that's Owl like the bird, except with two W's and two L's. I recently had someone call me on the Owl app, and she said she saw me interviewed on their podcast live from PodFest Multimedia Expo in Orlando back in January. Obviously, during our call on the Owl app, she and I were talking about podcasting, and I have introduced her now to someone that I felt was a logical connection because that's just how you do it. Call me on the Owl app and let's chat. Maybe there's someone I can connect you to. Maybe you need my help with podcasting or from me as a publicist, or maybe you just want to chat about this show. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click into the news section and then look for the article in there under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. The Owl app is free to download, and I have links in that article to get it from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, I have my invitation code in that article because you will need that as you're setting up the app on your phone. It is a required field. Get on Owl and make valuable connections for your career. Mark, getting back to this journey that you've been on in your music career, describe for us how you navigated working with bigger name artists and working fully independently.
Yeah, this is something I'm still figuring out on the day to day, and I think I will always be figuring out. But now that I work entirely independently, it's another beast to be taken down, I guess, because when you have somebody like a Pooh Bear or something that you work directly for every day, you always have like something going on, you know, because it's an entity like that. Their world's always, you know, they have cool shit going on all the time. So now that I'm just fully by myself, I have to make all that cool shit happen all the time. So it's been very amazing and cool process to just now freely, instead of, you know, I'm always set to a specific person every single day, even when, you know, Justin was working a lot, like I would be going to their studio and be in their process for set times every single week. But now that I'm just fully by myself, it's been amazing just navigating and having people come to my studio, you know, flying all over, bouncing around town, just trying to keep it all in motion and keep everything in check. Because when you, you know, work at, I'll do a mix here, then do a session here in, at a studio in town, then I'll fly to Atlanta and do some sessions over there, then I'll come back. It's just, it's a lot of different angles to just balance. And even, you know, talking here with you, this is, I'm able to do these things now too and balance in just kind of like being a more present voice in the audio community. So it's just been really cool trying to figure out doing everything myself now, you know, and everything's just all on me.
Tell me when, why, and how did you move into mixing?
When? I've been mixing almost as long as I've been in just professional recording facilities. So I've been mixing seriously and for about a decade now, but I think more in the recent year or two, I've really kind of stepped further away from the recording process and just been more dialed into mixing. And I think it just come with the experience, and I've built up enough credits and where I have an influx of mixes that come at me all the time now, and I'm not so dependent on just, you know, recording. And that's also, it's taken time to build that. And, you know, it's kind of pushed over the edge in the past couple of years. And there's some people I still engineer for and I'll record, but, you know, it's the more special kind of people or people I really truly believe in versus, you know, just doing stuff because I need to make money. But luckily the mixing has been taken over, and that's really what I want to do at the end of the day, because it's so much more of a, you're more, I would say, involved in the creative process in a way, and your likelihood of the songs reaching the consumer are much higher as well too. So these are all the reasons where like I've been trying to work towards mixing more full time, and I am mixing pretty much full time now. I'm just trying to build on that and really get the creative process dialed in.
So based on everything that you just said there, and then before when you were talking about your schedule being very fluid, one day you're there working, the next day you're flying to Atlanta, at some point you make the decision to put together a personal workspace and run your own music studio. I'm guessing that's in Los Angeles. How big of an undertaking was that for you? Was there anything that you ran into that maybe you had not accounted for? Just walk us through all that.
Yeah, I think it was a bigger undertaking because it was just something that I've never done before. I've run studios and I've worked at pro studios, but it was always under, you know, somebody else funded it, somebody else built it. But now, you know, doing it all on my own, it was one of those things where I've been working independently for a few years, but it's still such in Los Angeles, rent is so insane on everything. So even a studio was just, rent's already crazy high, so having another one is it's sometimes a scary thing to do. But I made the jump and I found a place that was, you know, relatively inexpensive, close to my house, and it already kind of was built out. It was just a bit more of a fixer-upper kind of situation, because it was definitely like, you know, they had a bunch of rappers in this studio beforehand, and the place just smells terrible and was beat to all hell. And but when I found the place, I was like, you know what, I could definitely, on the worst month ever, totally afford this place, and I need to get something that can, I can just be working at a higher capacity for myself, because I was bouncing around at studios, engineering, and using studios that I'm close with, but it's just not sustainable when you have, like, you know, a mix that you're doing for a client in Nigeria. They happen to be in town, and they want to just do some mix notes. So I was like, those situations that would come up where I'm like, I have to rent a studio, or I can't really have them over at the apartment. And I ended up getting this place about a year and a half ago, you know, put my own little twist on it. And it really wasn't too bad to put together. And I've helped with so many and build out other much more massive studio situations. So this one was already kind of ready to go. All I needed to do was make it a little prettier, make it a little cuter, and put some gear in there and get working.
But how do you make the decision about location as it relates to, if you're dealing with a level of client, the likes that you are, the Justin Biebers, the Pooh Bears, the Meghan Trainors, etc., you can't go to, here's a place that's available, maybe I can make this into my studio, and it's in the worst part of town, that they're going to go, I'm not going there. At the same time, if you go to the absolute best part of town, that rent that you just described is going to be even more astronomical than you know it already can be. So how do you kind of walk that line so that you go, I know that an A-lister would come here if he or she needed to, but I also know that I'm not going to go broke just paying rent and never make any money for myself?
Yeah, that was the biggest balance for me. And I still try to find that balance, because this place is, it's cool, but I don't know if I'll ever get Justin to come over here, or even get some of these bigger people to show up here even, because some of these people, they just work in the nicest places. So yeah, they are like, you know, anything like that, I almost, those situations, I will still find another studio, to be honest.
Interesting.
But I found it nice enough where majority of my clients are going to feel comfortable here and can come here no problem. But the places that I found that I thought were at the level of what those artists were, they would feel comfortable coming in, it would be $5,000 a month, you know, to find these places. And like, when you find ones that are a little cheaper than that, it's like, because you just have to have a connection or know, or you have to have some kind of in with somebody to have a nice enough situation. So I found it where this place is super close to my house. I primarily mix here. I will maybe engineer a session here maybe once a month or so. But most of the time I just mix here, and any of these clients, I just send out files to mix. And when the rare cases that somebody wants to do an edit, you know, they're more than welcome to come through here, and it's totally cool.
So you had said all I had to do was just kind of spruce it up a little bit, make it look pretty, and then get some gear. Did you already have your eye on what specific gear you were going to get because you did have the luxury of working in so many studios that you were able to test drive a lot of hardware and a lot of different settings and say, okay, when I get my own studio, I'm going with this?
Yeah. And even before I had got this place, I pretty much had all of the gear already. I have all the gear that rivals most major studios, but I had it in my apartment, and I had my guest room at my apartment I was doing everything at. So when I came over here, it was honestly so easy because I already had all the gear. And probably a couple months before I got this place, my daughter was born. And before my daughter was born was when I really made the decision where any of the few pieces of gear that I didn't have, I was like, you know what, now's the time I need to just buy it and use this investment, because now I need to use this to really amplify myself, because now I have a child. So I need to really, you know, it's another level of pressure that I have to uphold every day.
No doubt.
So I already knew exactly what I wanted and, you know, made all the purchases a couple, maybe 6 months before I got the studio. So okay, when I got the studio space, it was honestly just, you know, make the space a little bit nicer and move everything in and start working. I had everything dialed.
What are you working on presently? And for that matter, what's coming out soon that you worked on?
I'm working on primarily just mixing right now. I have a song with one of my close collaborators named Harv that just came out called Can You that I'm excited about. I have some projects on Def Jam that I'm mixing that will be coming out soon. I have a whole slew of independent clients from all over that I'm mixing, and we'll have like a lot of songs coming out in the recent months. So really just a lot of mixes are kind of in the works, and that's really what I'm looking forward to. And I'm kind of just focusing in that world primarily.
Is it safe to assume, being that when I was giving out all your online destinations, I told the audience to look for the contact form to get in touch with you about rates and services, is it safe to assume that you're open for business?
Yeah, definitely. If it's something that fits the schedule and it fits within my vision of what I do, and we see alike, I'm more than happy to work with, you know, new clients that come through my contact form or my website and email. So if you feel like working, you're more than welcome to reach out and, you know, see if we just are a good fit with each other, and I'm more than happy to work.
But what I like about that, Mark, is for the independent artist who's listening in Dallas, Texas, for the independent artist who's listening in Sweden, it's not going to be a case of, I can never get near this guy. And I don't mean geographically, but I think what happens is people hear an interview like this and they go, whoa, this Mark Parfit guy, he's operating at a whole nother level from where I'm at. And it's refreshing to hear you say, if it fits my vision, if it fits my schedule, if it looks like a project that I'd enjoy working on, then by all means, fill out that form and I will get back to you.
Yeah, I've really been trying to work with as much independent up-and-coming people if I can as well. Because, you know, I don't ever see myself on top of a pedestal in any type of way, no matter any accolades or any people that I have worked with.
Nice.
I'm totally open, and I want to find the next people as well too. Mm. I do meetings with artists. I have them come through my studio. I go out to events because I'm also searching for whatever the next inspiring thing is, because some of these people, maybe they don't have it all right now, but I know with some certain people, you could tell their chances are pretty good when, you know, you see that they have the drive, the music is of quality, the people are of quality. So I am always more than open to working with, you know, new people or independent. And I have realized in the recent years that some people do think, they're like, I didn't even reach out to you because I thought it was going to be too expensive. And it's like, what? Just, you should have just reached out to me. I would have loved to work on that. I would have figured out something. But like, I have noticed that has been a little bit of a thing, but I don't want to be that person that's, you know, untouchable. I feel like even if, as I get more things that come my way and other levels that I hit and achieve, I'm still always open-minded.
Yeah, it's interesting that people make up their mind that they can't afford you before they ever ask what the price is, because as a publicist, yes, I've always really built my business on serving artists, but I've also been smart enough, and I don't say that egotistically, but I've also been smart enough over the years to expand. And there's a lot of authors that I work with as a publicist. And I had an author who contacted me and said, I would love to work with you someday, but I probably can't afford you. And I thought, well, how do you know until you ask? So, yeah. You know, for someone to say to you, oh, I didn't even want to ask you because I probably can't afford you. Well, did you ask me? No, you didn't. So that's why you didn't work with Mark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Having heard all that, before we head towards the closing song, now that you've taken us from your early years to present day, what would you say are your current goals, especially given all that you have accomplished already?
Currently, I'm trying to really just triple down on mixing songs, and I'm trying to just be at a consistent level where I can mix high profile clients and, you know, get an assistant working under me, maybe expand the studio a little bit or get another bigger space where I can have more of the infrastructure and that some of these, you know, really top guys do and the teams that they build. I'm currently just trying to really get my mixes dialed in and hit that next tier and build out my team and have my own machine rolling, so to speak. So
I love it.
That's my current goal. And I think the foreseeable goal for a long time.
I love it. We're going to close today with another song that Mark worked on. You heard him briefly allude to it before. It just came out this past Friday and is called Can You by an artist named Harv. Mark, before I let you go and I play that track, share first with the audience all about this one, if you would please, including what your role was on this track and how you came to work on it.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this song because it's a more interesting one too. I engineered and mixed the whole song, and it kind of just started as a, you know, I was working with AEA microphones and doing like a little video with them. So they helped set us up with a whole slew of their equipment, and we were just going to make a video about, you know, some of these amazing producers and songwriters just showing kind of their process and then showing how the producer and engineer, oftentimes when you see these teams that are really locked in, it's a completely unspoken art where you will see the engineer and the producer or the songwriter never even say a single word to each other, but you'll see them build the entire song because we've all just worked on hundreds of songs together and you know each other's process. You know what they like, they don't like, where they're going, even if it's a new song. We just did a video with AEA to show that process that I even have with Harv. And at the end of the day, he's like, man, I really like this song. This is a cool song. Because we didn't go in with any intent. We were just like, hey, we're going to make a song today and leave it at that and make a cool video. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's like, I actually really love the song. I think I just want to put it out, you know, under my own artist project for real, not just let it be like a little idea for a video one day. So we did this, and it's cool because we have a whole video lined up where it just shows him creating the song and us just, you know, kind of nudging through quickly and just showing how the actual process literally went, because you saw it created, you know, documented right there on film.
Where can people see that video? On your Instagram, on your TikTok, on your YouTube, all the above? Where is that?
I believe it's going to be on Harv's YouTube, but okay. I will post it on my Instagram for sure when I know exactly where it is going to live.
Good stuff. Mark, we were long overdue to do this. I'm glad we finally did. Congratulations on all your success. Wish you nothing but the continued best. And thank you for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. It was great to talk with you.
Likewise. Likewise. With that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to recording and mixing engineer Mark Parfit. Again, do visit his official website at mparfit.com. As I mentioned before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Look on Mark's website for social media links, logos, to go follow and engage with him on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and even Threads. For that matter, tell him you heard him on Now Hear This Entertainment. Remember to look on mparfit.com for the contact form to get in touch with him about rates and services. I say this every week, but I mean it. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Mark and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years without missing once by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 540. Thanks ever so much for listening. I will send you out today with another song that Mark worked on, as performed by Harv. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Can You.
Can you be the one I run home to? Can you be the one I make love to? I need all of your time, need you all in my space. If you give me your heart, baby, I won't waste all. Can you be the one? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let me pull up on you, baby, in my two-seater. I need that little red dress fitting so tight. I bless you with the matching Rolex at a time set. And when I look up in the stars, shawty, you're there. Baby, don't say no, cause I'm gonna give you all I have. And I know you never felt the love like this. I go deeper and deeper every time we hit. So, can you be the one I'm right home to? Yeah. Can you be the one I make love to? I need all of your time, need you all in my space. If you give me your heart, baby, I'm always so. Can you be the one? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll catch all your signs. There's no need to tell me, yeah, I'll read your mind. And I know you feel that pressure, so don't be shy. You can't run from this love, you know it's right. So baby,